This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome back to the Storytime Podcast. My name is Claire. I go by Clizaire on the internet, and this is the podcast where people come on to tell me their stories. And this week I have with me Christy. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Claire. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Would you like to tell everyone, like, introduce yourself and tell them where to find you on the internet?
Absolutely. My name is Dr. Christy Sumner, and I'm the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal, and we're located at www.soulsistersparanormal.com. That's our website, and we're also very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal, as well as YouTube under Soul Sisters Paranormal.
And that kind of gets us nicely into the story you're going to be telling us. So you're going to be telling us some paranormal stuff today.
Absolutely. Some ghost stories, if you will. So like I said, my name is Christy Sumner. I am the founder of Soul Sisters Paranormal. And what we are is a all-female paranormal investigation team located in the U.S. And we go around the country telling the historic narrative of reportedly haunted locations. And we investigate those locations for paranormal activity. So we've been to places like the Lizzie Borden House, the St. Augustine Lighthouse, the Villisca Axe Murder House. And we really approach it with a historical mindset and an historical approach. So we'll go in and we'll do a complete investigation. And we have research tools that we use and a research method that we use. And we'll look for signs of paranormal activity. So some of the things that we found in some of those locations are spirits such as of prisoners in prisons, people that have been in insane asylums. We've spoken to spirits from, again, the St. Augustine Lighthouse and different residents and businesses that we go to. So we found a lot of different things that we consider paranormal or unexplainable, if you will.
Wow. So yeah, I have so many questions, I suppose. Like, how, what do you do? So take it right back to the start. So how do you decide where to go? Does somebody call you and say, I think we've got something, or is it mostly historical places, or?
It's both. So we do have people that contact us and say, you know, can you come and investigate our house, our business? Or we will go to what we call a commercial location, such as the Lizzie Borden House or Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. And we will have complete control of the location for an evening, or in some cases two. And we stay the night in these locations, and we set up night vision video cameras, voice recorders, different pieces of equipment that we'll take with us to measure different things like electromagnetic energy. So we've captured things like voices that we can't explain, shadow figures that will walk through laser grids, noises, bangs. We've had objects roll when we've asked them to. We've heard what we call disembodied voices, which is something like we'll be speaking and we'll hear, for example, a man's voice speak over us, and there's no men on the property with us that night. So it's a very interesting, an expensive hobby, if you will, but it is a labor of love for what we do.
Yeah. So it was actually, one of my questions was going to be, is it a hobby or a job? So it's a hobby and you guys have full-time work around that.
It is. We all are full-time employed. And it is one of those things that is self-funded for us, but we take it very seriously in the fact that we want to give a very detailed history and narrative of the locations that we visit, because we feel our audience may not have a chance to visit those locations. So like I said, for example, the Lizzie Borden House, we will go in and we'll tell the history behind that, the events that happened there, why there is supposed to be reported activity, haunted activity there. And then we'll go in and do a complete investigation, and we will tell our findings. So that's really how we approach each of those investigations.
Yeah. So I was going to ask why. And so is that for historical kind of documentation? Is that why you guys are doing this?
We've always had a fascination with the paranormal. And so we were actually on a girls' trip. The team is made up of myself, my twin sister, our younger sister, and a couple family friends. And we would routinely take girls' trips to meet up in different parts of the country and experience different things. And in one of those locations, we decided to do a paranormal investigation at a reportedly haunted prison. So we stayed the night in Moundsville, West Virginia, at the Moundsville State Penitentiary. And we heard footsteps at night. We heard voices that we couldn't explain, things running at us in the night and through the darkness when we knew that there was nothing else there. So it really propelled us into, you know, what we do now. And it is one of those things, like I said, we'll go to these historic locations and tell the history behind that, because while we get to be there and really experience it on a tactile level, like we get to touch the bricks and the doorknobs and all of that, we want to take our audience with us there as well.
And come here to me. Do you feel fear? You sound pretty fearless.
Every now and then, you know, we'll have moments where we get startled. You know, you can't stand in an abandoned asylum and hear a door slam and not be startled. But, you know, for us, it really is an adrenaline rush. We'll go towards that noise or towards that sound to see if we can figure out what's causing it. And absent any environmental factors, we will call it unexplained.
I don't know where to start. Yeah. Have you any kind of stories that stick out in your mind?
Absolutely. I mean, we've gone all around the country. Probably one of the most interesting things that we've experienced has been at Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, which is in the state of Tennessee. And this was a maximum security prison. The worst of the worst were housed there. It was in operation until 2009. And after it closed, it really just sat abandoned for several years. And then they started offering paranormal tours or the chance for paranormal investigators to go in and stay the night in this location. So we've been there twice. We've investigated there on two separate occasions. And the first night we were there, it was just my twin sister and I. And so we were walking around this prison and we, again, were hearing things that we couldn't explain. We had men yelling at us down these prison cell blocks and there were no men there. We captured footsteps that we couldn't explain, large bangings that we couldn't explain. And during the night, we set up night vision video cameras in different locations around the building. And during the night, if you watch that camera, one of these cameras, rocks were being thrown through the darkness at this camera, sometimes hitting the camera. And it happened all night long and we couldn't explain that. And then the second time that we went, we actually did a collaboration with Ghost Biker Explorations. She's a fellow a paranormal investigator. So it was Miranda from Ghost Biker, her camera guy, and then my twin sister and I and another investigator of ours named Kim. And so we're standing in this gymnasium, a former gymnasium, and complete darkness. And we just had a couple of things that had a small glow, like a glow-in-the-dark balloon or a handheld item that had a small light on it, sitting in the middle of the gymnasium. And we were back about 15 feet and we were just asking questions and we heard a male's laugh. Again, not one of us, we heard a male's laugh and we saw a shadow figure dart in front of us, but between us and the equipment we had in the center of the gymnasium. And we actually caught that shadow figure on camera. So as you hear us talking, you can hear this large male laugh behind us. And then a shadow figure darts across and we captured that on two different pieces of equipment, one of those being a video camera. So it was pretty exciting to capture something like that.
Yeah. And so what, do you ever communicate or is it literally just about observation?
No, absolutely. So we'll sit and ask questions and we get a majority of the time we do get what we call intelligent responses. So, for example, we were at Hales Bar Dam, which again is in Tennessee. And this is a dam that has a series of tunnels that run underneath it. And so my sister and I were sitting in one of these tunnels and we had a voice recorder down at the other end of the tunnel and a voice recorder where we were sitting. So we're just asking questions. And I said, "What is your name?" And we didn't hear anything in that moment. And then I said, "What is my name?" And we hear a loud male voice yell, "Christy," down the tunnels. We captured that on audio. And then when we went back and listened to that audio, when you hear me ask, "What is your name?" a male said, "Hank." And then right behind that, it said Christy when I asked my name, and we captured both of those on audio, which again is intelligent. It is what we consider intelligent. It saw us, it heard us, and it repeated his name and then my name. So we do have conversations like that. We've had instances where we actually interact with a spirit. So for example, we were at the Exchange Hotel in Gordonsville, Virginia, and this is a Civil War hospital that saw both Union and Confederate soldiers during the Civil War. And then it became a hotel after that. And there's a report of a child spirit that runs throughout this hotel. And we had what we call K2 meters in our hands. And what these do is they measure electricity, essentially. And so there's no electricity anywhere where we're sitting. So theoretically, they should not go off. So I was sitting on one end of this hallway, and my investigator, Kim, was probably about 15 feet from me. And we're sitting on the floor, and we each have one of these K2 meters in front of us. And they're stationary. They're not doing anything. There's no alarming on either one of these pieces of equipment. And I had a glow in the dark ball. And I said, you know, Jeremiah, if you're with us, will you light up the meter in front of me, and I'll roll this glow in the dark ball down to Kim? And my meter lit up. So I rolled the ball down and the meter stopped lighting up. And Kim asked the same question. She said, if you want me to roll it back to Christy, light up my meter. And her meter lit up. And there's no explanation for that, because there's no power acting upon those meters. So for us, we consider it unexplainable.
Wow. And like, so unexplainable is kind of like where you've a pretty good idea that there's some sort of paranormal activity going on, but like, obviously you can't really prove it. So it's just kind of deemed as unexplainable, but like, you have an explanation for it, but yeah.
So correct. And I understand your question for sure. So we're very hesitant to call something haunted or true paranormal, because if somebody can come and explain that to us, then we want to have that dialogue. We want to know what that answer is. So for us, what we do is we go into these locations and we really try to control for any environmental factor that we can. So we will go in the day before and we will look for light sources. We will listen to car activity to see where roads are, listen for airplane traffic, train traffic, and control the environment as much as we can. And so when we do the investigation, if we find something that is contrary to that, then we consider that unexplainable. So for example, if I'm in a room and it's just my twin sister and I in this room, and just females in the entire building, yet I'm capturing a man's voice on my voice recorder, that's something that I cannot explain in the moment because there are no men there. If I'm capturing a child laughing and I know there's no children anywhere on a property, that to me is unexplainable. So like I said, if somebody can come back behind us and say, well, I think it was this, then we want to have that conversation to see if we can recreate it. But in that moment, to us, it is unexplainable.
That makes total sense. Yeah. So you guys are open to, you're leaving yourself open to discussion. And yeah, that makes total sense. I know it's hard when you're asked off the top of your head, but like, what have you a favorite experience that you've had doing this kind of stuff?
Absolutely. So, that is an interesting question. So I'll take it from two answers. The first one is, as I said before, what we do is very historical. So we get to go into these very historic locations. So from a historic perspective, that answer to me is going into Fort Mifflin, which is in Philadelphia. And this is a Revolutionary War fort that was built by, you know, revolutionaries trying to hold off the British Army. And so to go into that location and have control of that location for an entire evening and just walk through it from a history standpoint was one of the very, you know, coolest experiences about what we do. But when we were talking about paranormal, we were in an old city jail called the old Gilchrist County Jail in Gilchrist County, Florida. This is about an hour's west of Trenton, Florida. And this is a small jail. It had four little cells on the first floor, four cells on the second floor, and then a small jailer's cottage. So a very small footprint. And the first time I went there, again, it was with Miranda from Ghost Biker Explorations. She and I were the only two people on the entire property that night. And when we walked in, we immediately started feeling things, and every piece of equipment that we had that night was indicating that there was something going on that we couldn't explain. So there's no power there. There's no water there. It's completely overgrown with ivy and, you know, moss, Spanish moss and all of that. But yet we were capturing men's voices. We were seeing shadow figures in the moment. We had a laser grid that was set up to beam down this hallway. And we would ask, if you're here, can you walk across the hallway? And it did it on command. We had a shadow figure walking on command across the hallway. And then we said, can you go back the other direction? And it did. It walked back the other direction through the laser grid. And we captured all of that on camera. So I would say that was probably our most, what I would consider, active location that we've gone to. But each one that we've gone to has been very unique from a historical perspective, but also from the paranormal activity that we've captured there.
And why do you think like that one in particular was so active, just from a totally third person point of view? Like, I'm just wondering why spirits are hanging around, you know?
Yeah, in that location, because it's a jail, the theory that I personally have with jails is that some of those spirits are afraid of the repercussions of what happens next. You know, when you leave this life and you go to the next realm, you know, what's going to happen?
That actually makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Exactly. So in that location, they had several reports of murders happening in that cell or in that jail, because what would happen in that county is the jailer would lock you up, in these cells, and there could be anywhere from 8 to 10 guys in these cells. And essentially he would just turn off the lights at night and go home. And when he came back the next morning, if you were alive, then good for you. If not, then, you know, they just took your body out and replaced it with another person in the cell. So I think in that location, because it was such a small area, and there were so many reports of death in that location, it was very active. After it became abandoned, it was an operation from 1928 to 1968. And after they moved from that location, it sat abandoned for decades. So it actually became a location where drug deals would go down. Local people would go in and have drug deals there. And there's actually a report from 2009 that there was a drug deal gone bad and a person was killed there as well. So a lot of dark activity. So I think that was really why that place is very active paranormally.
Wow. It's so interesting. I just never thought about any of this stuff. How do you decide where you want to go? Like, if you're choosing your own place, for example, how do you decide? I presume you travel all over the States when you can.
We do.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, we do travel all over the country. A lot of the locations that we've gone to your point earlier, they'll either ask us to come and investigate, or we'll choose them because they have a historical perspective as well as a paranormal reports of paranormal activity. So West Virginia State Penitentiary, Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, all of these locations have reports of paranormal activity. And we want to go there really to build our portfolio and try different techniques. And that's why we visit those commercial locations. We also do what we call residential locations. So these are locations where a homeowner or a business owner will contact us and say, hey, I think there's some type of activity going on in my house, or, you know, I've seen my door close or something like that. Can you come in and just either put my mind at ease or give me some examples of what's going on in my house? So we've done those as well. A lot of those cases, it really is about putting the homeowner's mind at ease or the business owner's mind at ease. And in some cases, debunking, what we call debunking their reported activity. So we go in and look at it again with that research mindset. And some of the things that we've found are caused by environmental factors. And then we explain that to the homeowner. To your point, we either pick the locations or we get called in.
Yeah. And so obviously you guys are really interested in this. And so, you know, where's the paranormal sort of reports are coming from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really, really interesting. In terms of the residential one you mentioned, mm-hmm. you said like homeowners or business owners, does it ever come from a place of somebody just even if they don't know it yet, they will actually just want to talk to somebody that's gone? Or do you ever get kind of people where, you know, I'm assuming a lot of your residential calls might be people like scared of what's happening in their house and you kind of have to put their mind at ease. But do you ever get that they're convinced it's like someone they know or anything like that, and you kind of might have to break it to them?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we do get those calls, and a lot of them come after they've experienced a death in the family, or, you know, that they've had some type of tragic event in their life. And, you know, there are cases where we'll go in and we actually say, you know, there's things that we can't explain. You know, we're in your house, we're in here for the night. You know, we've captured some of the things that you're describing. In that instance, we will give them options on what they can do. They can either, you know, attempt to communicate with the spirit themselves, or they can attempt to remove the spirit. We have people that can help them with that. A lot of cases, they just really want peace of mind that they're not going crazy. You know, we've had some locations where we go in and say, yeah, you know, we found this, we've heard this, we captured this, this is what we think is going on. And they're like, cool, I live in a haunted house now. And so they're fine with that. They just want validation that they're, again, not going crazy. But in some instances, we do have to say, this isn't paranormal. For example, we were investigating a business. This gentleman called us in. He said, you know, I'm convinced that my business is haunted. Can you come in and give me some evidence to support that? So when we went there, his business is, it's a large storefront. It's all glass in the front. He had display cases around inside the business. He had some mirrors around and he had some night vision video cameras. And he said that his cameras kept going on and off during the night. And that's what really convinced him that his place was haunted. And so we went in, we did a complete investigation and none of our equipment was alarming. We had no indication that there was anything paranormal that we could find. We sat there for about 3 hours and we asked questions and we really weren't getting anything or feeling anything. So we left some of our night vision cameras in the building. And then we left and we let them run there for about 4 hours. So the next morning I called him and I said, did your cameras pick up anything during the night? And he said, oh yeah, they were going on and off. And I said, well, give me those timestamps and I'm going to cross-reference them with my cameras that we left. And what we found was his storefront set at a location with a high volume of U-turn traffic. So when the cars would turn during the night, the headlights would bounce, would come in through the glass, hit this mirror in the back of the store and essentially blind his night vision video cameras. So they would go off with the night vision and then turn back on. And he couldn't see that.
You wouldn't know that.
Right, because of the way his cameras were stationed. So what I said is just either take the mirror down or reposition the cameras and I think your activity will stop, and it did. So that's the kind of thing that we really look for. And then, you know, we'll explain that to the homeowner or business owner. But like I said, there are some cases where we actually legitimately capture things we can't explain.
And you've mentioned a lot of equipment there. So how do you how do you know what to get? How did you begin when you were starting out? Like, how did you know?
It's one of those things, you know, I compare it to those people that get tattoos. It's one of those things where you can't just get one thing. We started out with voice recorders. And for me, capturing a voice on a voice recorder is one of the hardest things to debunk, if you will, because again, if I know the number of people in a location and I know their gender, but yet I'm capturing something else, that's very hard for me to come up with a rational explanation for. So voice recorders is something that we've had from day one. We've had some digital cameras where we'll just take pictures. And we've had a couple of night vision video cameras that we took with us on that first investigation. After that, it really was one of those things where we just kind of started adding to that. There's typical pieces of equipment that a lot of paranormal investigators use. And those really have to deal with measuring energy or measuring vibration or those things that, you know, we can leave in a location and a spirit can essentially manipulate. So we have laser grids that we use, again, that will allow us to see a shadow that walks through. We have, like I said, several different pieces of equipment that measure energy levels. So if we go into a location and we know that there's no power or electricity on, theoretically, these things should not go off. But when I leave them in a location and they start alarming or going off, that could be an indication that a spirit is using its energy to manipulate that piece of equipment. So that's the type of things that we take. We're also very big on what we call trigger items. So we will take an item that we think is germane to the situation or the event that happened there. So for example, we investigated a house that in 1935 was the shootout between the FBI and the Ma Barker gang. And so when we investigated that house, we took bullets. We took some money. We took some whiskey because they like to drink whiskey. And we left those things in different rooms. And we said, these are for you. You know, we're leaving them for you. When we went to Fort Mifflin, there's a solitary confinement there. And we took water and bread and a cigarette. And we left that in that solitary confinement area and said, you know, these are for you. We're recognizing that. So we'll take those things as well. And that really, again, to try to elicit a response. But yeah, we have various pieces of equipment that we'll take with us.
And what would you say to anyone who doesn't believe in the paranormal?
You know, I get that question a lot, and my response is that's absolutely fine. You know, what we're doing is not trying to convince anyone of anything. It's like trying to convince you that my religion is correct. I'm not going to do that. What we're doing is, first, we're giving you a very cool historical narrative of the location, and then we're telling you what we did in that location as far as an investigation, and I'm telling you the compelling evidence that we captured during that night. And if you want to believe it, that's fantastic. If you don't, I completely understand that as well, because my job isn't really to convince you. My job is to give you a very historical narrative and try to give you a different perspective to look at that narrative. So again, if I'm in a, like I said, Fort Mifflin, and I'm capturing things that are really interesting in that location, that's what I'm trying to give to the audience, and they can believe it or they don't have to believe it. That's not, that again, is not my job. My job is to, what I feel is, give you a very interesting story.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple of times about like maybe hearing a man's voice on a tape when you've all ladies there. So do you find that the all lady paranormal team actually really helps you out in that regard sometimes?
It is different, and we do get a lot of different things than an all male team would. I feel the reason behind that is, you know, females have a sense of empathy, right? I think they're born with that because, you know, our job is to have children at some point. So I think we have a sense of empathy that is innate in, you know, we're born with that. I don't think that we're empaths per se on the team, but we go in with a different mindset. You know, for example, like if we know there's children that are supposed to be in the area, we'll get down on that level. We'll play on the floor and do different things like that. So I do think an all-female team has a different dynamic and elicits different responses from these locations. And I do think we've used that to our advantage. An all-female team going into a prison, an abandoned insane asylum, you know, we don't go in with a sense of bravado. We don't go in and say, you know, I'm not going to believe you're here unless you throw a chair across the room or really try to provoke her or anything like that. We go in and we really want to tell the story. And if you watch any of our videos, that's the theme throughout. You know, you'll hear us say, can we tell your story? Will you allow us to tell your story? And I think because of that, we do get different responses than an all-male team would.
Amazing. Do you want to remind everyone where to find you on the internet and check out all of your videos?
Sure, absolutely. So our website is www.soulsistersparanormal.com. And again, we're very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal, as well as YouTube under Soul Sisters Paranormal.
And is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I just really appreciate your time, and thank you for listening to my story.
Thank you so much for joining me. Absolutely. Thank you so much for watching and or listening on the audio platforms. The Storytime podcast is available on YouTube and on the audio platforms. If you're an audio listener, please give us a rating because it really helps us out. And thank you so much for joining me, Christy.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
And thank you. See you in the next one. Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.